Ahead on Straight Talk, Portland Mayor Keith Wilson nearly 1 year into his term.
What does real change for Portland mean?
His pledge to end unsheltered homelessness and the challenges still on the streets.
But let me be clear, 1,500 beds was never the finish line. It's a milestone. It's our beginning.
The controversial voter-approved measure to keep parks and pools open.
We have to value the parks, and this is a time to really make sure that that value, that asset, is really high-performing and well-maintained.
As City Hall works to stay ahead of aging facilities and budget pressures, and what it's been like leading Portland's new form of government.
The collaboration and coordination with our council is key.
With a new city administrator ready to step in, right now on Straight Talk. Hello and welcome to Straight Talk. Thanks for joining us. I'm Stephanie Domerat. Now, before taking office, Mayor Keith Wilson set an ambitious goal of ending unsheltered homelessness in Portland. Now, nearly 1 year into his term, Mayor Wilson is touting a major milestone in achieving that goal. Mayor Keith Wilson, thanks so much for joining us today.
Good morning, Stephanie.
Great to have you back. I want to ask you, of course, how you're feeling. This is a big week for you. You met your goal of opening 1,500 new shelter beds in Multnomah County. You did it by Monday, December 1st. How is that feeling for you, and what do you hope this means for people?
We opened 1,566 beds. We have about 1,100 that are scheduled to open. 400 will be on reserve. How do I feel? I'm tired, and I think my team is tired as well. But I do think there's a level of hope, excitement, that we achieved something that, so far as we know, hasn't been accomplished in our nation before. So it's an exciting time, but it's only just a chapter in a longer story. Now it's a matter of helping those individuals that are on the street. It's time to come inside.
So let's talk more about that, your broader goal to end unsheltered homelessness, right? So that was supposed to be in this first year of you as mayor. How close do you feel like you are of getting to that goal?
Well, we see significant change, but the goal was to make sure that every person, every night, for everyone who wants, has a safe bed and ready to come in. What I inherited when I entered office was a shelter system that would require you to wait up, 4 to 12 weeks if you were ready to come in. We needed to flip that. If somebody's ready to come in, we need to be ready too. And so to that extent, tonight, we have 200-300 empty beds. If you're ready for shelter, we're ready for you as well. So we've accomplished our goal.
So city data shows that many of these overnight shelter beds sit empty.
Yeah.
They're not at full capacity. These are the utilization numbers in October right here. You can see on your screen. So they range from 33 to 76% capacity. And I'm wondering, are you concerned at all that all of this effort has been done to open these beds, to make these beds available, but they aren't actually being filled every night?
No, we built a flexible system that's going to flex up and it's going to flex down. And I just want to, we did not build this system for our difficulties in August or October. We built the system to be ready in January and February, when if you're on the street, it could end in your loss of life. We need to be ready when those individuals are ready. I explained to my team, I need 200 to 300 empty beds every night. It's like an emergency room in a hospital. When you show up there, you don't want to be told it's full and you can't enter in. We have to treat the crisis like a crisis to make sure we have an empty bed ready for anybody who's ready to come inside at that moment as well.
What are you doing so that more people are willing to use these beds?
Well, utilization rate is increasing every single week. We started enforcement on November 1st, and that's having a significant increase in shelter uptake. So we're experiencing about a third of those individuals we're engaging with at the encampments are being arrested because of open warrants. About a third are accepting services. They're coming in. And then about a third are given warnings and citations. But that middle third that are coming in, we haven't had that sort of increase in our shelter usage before. That's because we're really explaining that we're not moving you in a camp from one neighborhood to the other neighborhood. Those sweeps are over. We're removing encampments, and people are accepting life-saving shelter at rates they've never done before.
And so for our viewers, to be clear, November 1st was when you enacted the camping enforcement ban again.
That's right.
That started. Why did you decide to do this now?
It was time. So you talked about that utilization rate. I could guarantee that an officer, an outreach worker, a community member, you, If you found somebody suffering on the street, I can guarantee you a bed tonight. So we had to build trust in the system that we had resources ready for all community members to provide help to all community members, if you will. November 1st was that date, and it's started, and it's really creating outsized gains to neighborhoods.
Can you give us specific numbers? You said 1/3 of people were cited or arrested. Can you give us more specifics
so
on that?
Sure. So let's just go to that first week. Mm-hmm. We contacted 101 people. It resulted in 40 arrests because there were warrants on those individuals. 40 people accepted services, went to shelters, if you were. And 40 of those, the remaining 20 were provided warnings and citations. The numbers to date, just on citations, we've only provided about 17 citations. For the most part, we've been able to bring people in and provide care.
When we had you on in April, I remember you said we can't arrest our way out of homelessness.
Right.
You know, how is that sitting with you today as you're now enforcing this ban?
We aren't arresting people for being homeless or camping. We're arresting people that have warrants, that need an opportunity to come inside and resolve what's keeping them on the street. Or we're holding those that are accountable, that are preying on our community. And those that are being preyed upon are often the homeless. And so those arrests are not for being homeless. Those arrests are because of issues they've had in the past that we're really asking them to come in and let's resolve that together.
So you haven't made any arrests or citations for people who are just strictly because they are camping somewhere?
No, the citation would be because of 4 or 5 or 6 bikes, a gun, a drug dealing or drug use. It's all for criminal activity, but it's not really tied. If you're in a tent and you're homeless, we're not going to arrest you or cite you for that. But we are going to address that warrant because we have so many people hiding in plain sight with criminal records that we really want to bring you in and help you through the system.
So earlier this week, some people and counselors held a rally at Portland City Hall. You, of course, have seen this, pushing for more long-term housing solutions. Here's what some people had to say, including Portland District 4 Counselor Mitch Green.
You're just putting them out of place in the night. You know, you're just stowing them away. And in the morning, they're still going to be on the street.
What is now abundantly clear is that sweeps and overnight shelters do not work and cannot work. We are pouring millions into a system that treats human beings like a storage problem.
What is your response to those comments?
Yeah, well, we're not sweeping people anymore. We're doing camp removals and we're bringing people inside. And so you'll look at the streets as you drive or walk or ride the bus or ride your bike, you're seeing hope on the streets. We have a lot of hard work to do, so I just want to make sure. Now, as far as the housing or the unsheltered, we're providing shelter to bring people in and establishing the continuum. The overnight shelters are working. I think you can see that yourself, but we have a lot of work to do. You know, we have to get away from this binary choice. You're going to be unsheltered or you're going to be housed. I am a huge housing proponent, and we are working with as much tenacity at adding housing to the equation as shelter. But we can't let people just suffer and die on the streets. You can't house people that are dead. And so let's make sure we provide life-saving care through the system so we can provide life-changing care as well.
I want to ask you to clarify something you said. You said we're not sweeping people anymore. We're not doing sweeps anymore. We're moving people. Can you explain what the difference
is? Yeah, a sweep is something that we were doing in the past. You would go in and do a camp abatement and you didn't have a shelter place for anybody. You're just moving them from one neighborhood to the next. We're not moving people from neighborhood to neighborhood anymore. When we do a camp removal, we're walking in with outreach, with services, and individuals are taking us up on that because we have a shelter available right at that moment, whether it's a day center, a night center, or connection to a TAS or an alternative shelter site. We've got connections for those individuals now.
So critics of these overnight shelters say it can be very disruptive or it's difficult for people to really establish stability because they have to leave in the morning at 6 a.m. What are you doing to improve that so it's not this constant movement for people who don't feel like they can get their feet under them?
Yeah, so we have a host of services at the shelters. Last night, we were able to connect a person with their loved one in Salt Lake City from our Northrop shelter. That was something we never had just a few months ago. That person's now with a loved one. So you see, it's not just a bed. It's a connection to life-saving services so that person can get up the next morning, rested and ready, and go to a job. or go to AA or NA or whatever service that person may need.
Is there a way to elongate stays so people don't have to leave at 6 or 7 in the morning?
Yeah, what we want to do is provide life-saving care in the overnight shelter, but we're providing connection into a 24/7 shelter, whether it's a city-run 24/7 shelter or a county 24/7 shelter. But when you think about the wait list at those 24/7 shelters or housing, we have to go through the process, but we don't want to have people wait, suffer, and die on the street while we're trying to get a bed ready for them.
I want to ask you something else that was reinstated in the last couple of weeks. The city reversed a policy that people would be able to retrieve their RVs that they had been living in. And before, the fee for them was waived. Now that fee is back, and it can be hundreds or thousands of dollars for people to get their RVs back if they've sat for, you know, up to 30 days or more. Why start that now? And for people who are critics of this that say this is someone's very last asset that you're taking away from them.
Yeah, a lot of these RVs weren't owned by the individual. They were found on Facebook Marketplace at a zero cost. There's no zero cost for an RV for an owner to try and get rid of. They're unlicensed, oftentimes inoperable, uninsured. They don't have a licensed driver. And so those are all privileges of being on the road. All we're doing is establishing the community standards. All participants that use the road have to live by the same standards. RVs, and let's be clear, they're at asbestos, they're unsafe, they're unsanitary, they're fire hazards. There's no place to put brown or gray water into the system. The closest place you can drop the water is Tiger, and we know people aren't doing that. It's providing life-saving care. Now, if you want to come and get your RV, you have to prove you've got insurance, a license, it's registered, like anybody and any person in Portland. We're just reestablishing community standards for all people.
Have you thought about a stipend or some way that people could help pay for insurance and things like that when they clearly, you know, don't have the financial assets that they need?
Stephanie, living in an RV is unsheltered homelessness. I made a commitment to Portlanders. We were no longer going to sustain the behavior where someone's going to live and die. I've got shelters available right now, whether it's an overnight shelter or 24/7 shelter, and we're going to get you into housing. Let's focus on caring for people instead of sustaining a lifestyle where it's an RV the other day just burned to the ground. I mean, it is dangerous. Let's stop trying to facilitate unsafe behavior and bring people inside and help them through the continuum.
There have been several outspoken counselors on city council who are not a fan of the way that you're trying to end unsheltered homelessness. So I want to ask you, if in another year or sooner you're not seeing the results you're hoping for, would you plan to pivot to a different strategy?
Well, let's talk about that's tomorrow. Let's talk about today. So we're doing some preliminary estimates. Just in the downtown clean and safe area, tents are down over 70%.
Since when?
Since January when I took office. That is profound. Now, we need more time to work, but the results are being realized right now. With our additional interdictions with going after drug dealers on 3rd Avenue in Old Town, a crime-ridden area, if you drive down 3rd Avenue right now in Old Town, you won't find dealers. Do you see? We just need to continue the efforts we're putting forward. So to talk about a year, I can't really start talking about a year. We're in continuous improvement. If we find a bottleneck today, we're going to find it, we're going to figure it out, we're going to fix it, and we're going to move forward. Let's talk about success today.
I want to talk about a reunification program and a story that we highlighted recently that inspired a lot of people. A Navy veteran named Tony, who had a series of bad luck, became homeless with his dog and his pig. They were living in his car. Portland's first responders met the man while he was living in his car. They helped reunify him with that unification program that you have here in Portland and help get the man back to his family in Chicago. Take a listen.
Trying to get dog food and gas for the car. And they stopped, rolled down their window and asked me, you know, what was my situation? I spoke out and I told my story to some people that were willing to listen to me. And they were the only people that even opened an ear to hear me. And I'm so thankful for it.
So his pig Roscoe went to a local sanctuary, which was above and beyond. You know, that's not easy to rehome a pig. But I want to ask if you can tell us more about the reunification program and how many people this is helping.
Yeah, so far in the last few months, we've reunified 200 people with their loved ones around the nation. We've sent people back to 40 different states so far. It's quite amazing. And it's working. It's very low cost. It can be anywhere from $20 up to $1,000 to help someone get back home. We're also working with Unity, which is a behavioral health crisis center. They'll help stabilize somebody. We will fly a pastor in. We'll fly a loved one in if someone needs help getting back home. But it's working extremely well. And connecting somebody with housing and a social network, which is a loved one, now that's the best type of housing. But here's the real important thing. Those 200 people, if we were to house them in our community, it's about $300,000 to build an apartment. That saved us $60 million, for in some cases, less than a few thousand dollars. We have to be creative in the face of the crisis we're in right now, but we're acting fast, but we're gonna use every tool we have to help connect people with their loved ones.
What's next as far as battling homelessness here in Portland? What are you looking at moving forward?
So we know that homelessness is a housing crisis. So we're addressing crisis that crisis with as much tenacity as we're addressing shelter. We set up a shelter to housing strike team. While we know we needed to stabilize and keep people alive today, now we need to start focusing on the end goal, and that's housing. So we're gonna be working as tenacious as we can. We'll work with counselors, we'll work with county commissioners, we're working with housing providers. There are so many empty apartments today, right now. How do we activate those apartments to create the flow through system so people can have life-saving housing, not just life-saving shelter?
Mayor Wilson, thank you. We are gonna take a quick break. We will have more from the mayor coming up right after this. And welcome back to Straight Talk. Thanks for joining us. We are continuing our conversation with Portland Mayor Keith Wilson, now almost a year into his term leading the Rose City. Thanks for being here.
You bet.
Great to have you back.
It's a pleasure.
I want to ask you about something that was, you know, basically put Portland into the national spotlight. The National Guard that was mobilized to protect the ICE facility in Southwest Portland. The legal battle really continues with this. Guard members have not been deployed in the city for now. There's also a land use violation case involving that facility. But I want to ask, have you gotten any updates on the future of the ICE detention facility in Southwest Portland or anywhere else in Portland?
Yeah, you know, the ICE facilities are being set up in other places in Oregon as well. Certainly alarming, but you talked about the troop deployment. We've been successful in really suing the government and pushing back, and we've won in the court of law each time we've sued them. And so we're really happy with the result right now. Those troops have that were garrisoned around Portland and in Oregon have been sent back home, which is wonderful. And so we're winning that court, those court cases right now. So far it's going really well.
And you spoke with Christy Noem when mm-hmm. she visited Portland. What was that conversation like?
Well, you know, I really wanted to talk to her from a value standpoint, and I realized it was really just skin deep. You know, they're just focused on kidnapping and detaining our neighbors, which is just alarming. And when I started in the conversation, we were comparing values, and I just was explaining to her, you know, the detention facility in Portland doesn't match our values. And, you know, she was frustrated by that. And I just said, we have to keep all Portlanders safe, and you're instigating these circumstances where you're putting tear gas and other munitions on our community members, and it wasn't keeping us safe. So we had a nice, spirited conversation. I shouldn't say nice. It was a spirited conversation, but I really was alarmed at how little they really knew about Portland and how really clarion-focused they were on really removing black and brown people, and it's an alarming situation. I think what they're doing is illegal, I think immoral, and I think it's antithetical to the America that we know.
Have you had any updates on if they plan to move out of that Southwest facility?
We certainly would like to encourage them to do that, but certainly they have a lease right now, which we're looking at, and I know there's some administrative ruling that we're talking about on that.
Switching gears now, Portland voters recently passed a parks levy that will help fund the parks for another 5 years. After it passed, you thanked voters and said too many funds have gone to new projects instead of maintenance. An audit in the fall also found that the city didn't have a long-term maintenance funding plan. How will things be different for Portlanders in the parks going forward so we don't have to ask voters again for money down the road?
First of all, I just want to thank the Portland public and the voters for passing this. And my promise is to make sure that that levy is well managed, that we're going to manage the parks with high standards. We're going to create a safe environment that's well maintained. We've already started looking at the 5-year scope of that. We're going to spend within our means, and we're going to use what funds we can on capital maintenance when we can. There's a small fraction that goes to capital maintenance. But we're going to be responsible with the funding and the ballot measure. And I had a meeting this week with my team outlining, I want a 5-year spending plan, and we're going to hit that. We're going to underspend every single year, and we're going to outperform on the maintenance for those facilities. So every person enjoying the parks can enjoy it, and then it can become evergreen and sustainable beyond that 5 years. And if we ask for another ballot measure, it's not going to be for a significant increase. It's just simply going to be a maintenance fund to continue the great service for our great parks. For all Portlanders.
So you took office in Portland as the city launched a new form of government.
Yes.
What are some things that you've learned in your first almost year now as mayor that you will take with you as you go into your second year as far as working with the council, metro, and the county?
Yeah, we know now that this mayor has a significant role in the executive leadership of the day-to-day. We're able to make changes quickly because I control all of the different business units. And so we see a collaboration, a creativity, a communication that we hadn't had in the past. The councils are really gaining their footing as we go along, but I've enjoyed the process. I think it is exactly what the voters wanted as far as the ability to execute change quickly, and we delivered an outsized goal this week. And now next year, it's going to be housing, reducing the burden on public safety, and revitalizing this city that we all know and love.
There's also many voices for each district in Portland,
yeah.
Right? That was part of this kind of switch to a new form of government.
Yeah.
How will you work with the council differently going forward than maybe you have in this first year?
I've enjoyed it. You know, you have councilors that are embedded in all 4 districts. A lot of them have humanitarian crisis issues in their districts. They're calling in for camp removals. They're asking for RVs to be removed, and they're able to work with the neighbors, and we're working and providing that care to them. So I think I like the district communication because we have somebody really in the district talking with the constituents, where I think City Hall used to be insulated in the past. It's anything but that now.
I want to talk about your nomination this last week for permanent city administrator Raymond Lee. He's coming from Greeley, Colorado. Can you walk us through the process of choosing him? We only have a few minutes.
You bet. We had 100 candidates. We were extremely surprised and excited by the pool. We got it down to 3 key candidates, extraordinarily accomplished. And Raymond Lee stood out because he is a current city manager. He had a huge economic development program in Greeley, Colorado, that we really need that economic development as well. He's going to come in and he's going to do a great job. We're excited.
What's the first big problem you're hoping he'll tackle?
I think, you know, we're focused on livability. We have an existing system moving forward. We're really going to ask Raymond to help us run the city at high standards, high performing, focusing on economic development to get people back into the community, on the buses, in our communities, downtown foot traffic, all those things. And he's going to come in with that skill to really allow us to work side by side to address multiple crises at one time.
As you head into your second year as mayor, it's gone by fast, I think, right? What grade do you think you'd give yourself for your first year?
That's just a solid B.
A solid B?
Yeah.
Okay.
Solid B. Plenty of room for improvement. A C would have been tripping up a lot of challenges, but I don't think we had any unforced errors in the mayor's office.
And what would you like voters to expect from you in this next year?
Sustainability. We set up the 1,566 beds. Now we're going to focus on housing. Now you're going to see every neighborhood throughout all 4 corners of the city improve. And I really want to start bringing back that mojo that Portland has. We have so many wonderful resources. The self-inflicted challenges of the past, it's over. Now I need community members to recognize it is time for us to really enjoy the midst of the renaissance that we all know and love.
I'd like to ask you, is there anything that you have been surprised about as you are an outsider of government? You came in and now you're leading the Rose City as mayor that maybe were different than what you thought? We have about 30 seconds.
I would say that what surprised me the most is the quality of the people that are helping me run the city. I'm so impressed with the high standards that they brought. They were looking for leadership. The culture is changing. I can see that we're becoming a high-performing, high-standard city, and I'm sure all the citizens are starting to see those green shoots in the city as well. So it surprised me that the quality is fantastic.
Great place to call home.
Yep.
Portland Mayor, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much, Stephanie.
Appreciate your time. And thanks so much for joining us here on Straight Talk. If you have an idea or a person you'd like us to interview, we'd love to hear from you. You can just send us an email to the email you see here on your screen. And as a reminder, you can stream Straight Talk on your own schedule anytime. Just download the free TV app, KGW Plus. It's available now on Roku, Apple TV, and Fire TV. We'll see you back here next week. Thanks for watching.